A new UN report on fertility rates came out this week. Birth rates in developing countries are going down. In the United States, there appears to be a slight increase. And while the numbers are still relatively low, this new trend could change how some actuaries, for instance, the chief actuary of Social Security, determine their long-term forecasts. For the rest of this hour, we'll talk about population changes in different parts of the world. What makes the numbers go up and down? What do they tell us about the future? And what do they mean for the people who make public policy? You're invited to join us, of course. Do you see a difference in the way your generation views children and your parents' generation? Do you see changes in population growth making a difference where you live? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now is William Fry, a demographer at the Brookings Institution. He's with us by phone from his office here in Washington. Thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, it's good to be with you.
Let's talk about the developing countries. And now, according to this UN report, the fertility rate in developing countries has dropped below 3 children per woman for the first time. How come?
Well, this is a very significant trend, I think, and because there's been a sort of a gradual dropping in the developing countries for several of these UN reports, way back down from when it was 5.4 and then for children per women in the early 1970s, and something like 20 countries now are very close to replacement in the developing country group. It has to do with a whole host of factors. Education is often seen as kind of a magic bullet. That is, the more education that women have in these countries, the more likely they are to pursue work. They're more likely to not go right into having children. The dissemination of contraception is also a very important matter in all of this. And I guess probably the kind of a globalization of communication and information about different lifestyles in other parts of the world also help people in developing country appreciate the significance of putting off fertility. And, that and a host of other things, I think, gives them the sort of the economic calculus to understand health-wise, economy-wise, they're better off delaying having kids. A lot of this is due to the delaying of having children. One of the parts of this report said that a much higher percentage of women aged 25 to 29 are still single in this period as opposed to the period around the 1970s. It's also the case for men in these countries. So it's the delay of fertility has a lot to do with it.
Now, what about more developed countries?
The developed countries, there's been always this kind of decline, especially since the 1970s. The United States had much of a bigger baby boom than most of the other the developed countries in the world, but aside from the United States, most of the other developed countries had this kind of shrinking fertility level, down to about 1.3 in the case of Italy and in the case of Japan, as opposed to a 2.1 total fertility rate, which you would need for replacement. Of course, the big exception to this trend, and the trend for the developed countries has much the same roots as what's going on in developing countries. Women are pursuing careers. These countries are becoming more urbanized. The old advantages to having lots of children in an agricultural society are less and less important in these countries. But what I started to say is in the United States, although the United States did participate in this shrinking fertility, especially in the 1970s, as the baby boomers came of age, women became more educated, wanted careers, and also the economy wasn't very good back in the 1970s, which also kept people from having kids, a number of factors. But as we got into the 80s and especially into the 90s, there's this kind of creeping up of fertility in the United States. And, the projections by the United Nations going up into the year 2050 have the U.S. fertility sort of in the level of 2.1, 2.0, down to maybe 1.8, but not nearly down to the levels of what they are in Europe or Japan today.
Which has a lot to say about the future of the world economy and, indeed, the future of power in the world.
Well, that's right. I mean, I sort of sometimes refer to Europe as kind of an emerging geriatric ghetto, because one of the implications of this low fertility is an aging of the population. Today, the average age, the median age of the population in Europe is about 37, which is about 2 years higher than the United States. But if you fast forward to the year 2035, which is after all the baby boomers have come into their senior years, the U.S. Median age only goes up about 3 years, from 35 up to 38. But in Europe, it goes up 12 years, from 37 up to 49. And that's a big discrepancy, having a median age of 38, which is kind of middle-aged even today in the United States, to making the median age 49 in many of the European countries. It has a lot to do with how we deal with social programs for the elderly, health care, the labor force, consumption patterns, and this idea of calling Europe a geriatric ghetto. I mean, a little bit harsh, but I think that's what these demographic trends suggest.
Anyway, those 38-year-olds are just spring chickens anyway. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a caller on the line. And Margaret is calling in from Palo Alto, California.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just calling to talk about briefly about an experience we had last year. We lived in Switzerland for the year with four children, and we had to register with the canton and everything. And we got a number of perks for having more than two children. We were able to use the rail system for each of our children for about 10 Swiss francs for the entire year because we had more than two children. And there were other cards that we got for restaurant discounts and things like that. So we found that there was quite a bit of perks if you had more than two children, and they're really trying to encourage people to have more children.
Well, William Fry, Switzerland is not alone. Thank you, Margaret, by the way. France, a lot of countries have subsidies for kids, people to have more kids.
I think that's true, and I think that just this points up the sharp social trends away from natality in these countries. That aside from these programs that are instituted to make it much more easy to have kids economically, the trends toward women's careers, the trends towards more urban living, I think are very much counter to that. And whatever the kinds of perks you might get, there's still a very big economic investment in having children, and I think people weigh that as well and maybe not find it not in the direction of moving them to have kids.
Let's talk now with Akilah. Akilah's calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah, hi. I'm from India, and when I was growing up, we had slogans all over public transportation, V2 and ours too. And when I was there, a teenager, it became V2 and ours one. And now there's a joke, we are ourselves too, why have one more? So the government encourages us not to have more kids. And it's very difficult because kindergarten, we have to pay donations of 10,000 rupees, and it's not feasible to have more kids. Whereas in U.S. here, we get child credits for having children, and although I have only two myself, I can have more because if I have to educate all of them, we wouldn't be able to afford more than two.
Talking about the situation in India, of course, there's also China, which does more than discourage people to have more than two children.
Yeah, the government is like they just encourage us not to have many kids, and it's practical too for us not to have. And many people have just one kids, and I just wanted to say that.
Thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I wanted to get to one other question, William Fry, before we have to go, and that is, as these numbers tick up, of course, fertility is one of the numbers that people plug into the calculations as they look ahead on policies like Social Security.
That's true. And, despite the fact that the U.S. is in a better situation than other developed countries, we still are in a situation where we have a huge baby boom cohort, which is going to be sort of wanting the benefits from the Social Security Trust Fund. And, unlike economics trends, which some people have a difficulty in predicting from one month to the next, demographic trends are pretty easy to predict decades in advance, and we do know that at the year 2035, 32, all the baby boomers will have been retired, or at least of retirement age. And even though the fertility is somewhat higher here in the U.S., we'll have something probably less than two workers for every person who are drawing retirement benefits. Still a much better situation than is going to be the case in many other countries where it's closer to one-to-one. But it's something to keep an eye on. It's not the only factor. Of course, the other thing we haven't talked about with respect to the retirement trust fund is the impact of immigration in the United States.
And medical improvements. If people live longer, they'll collect Social Security longer.
Well, that's true, and that's another part of this kind of aging of the population. Here, the U.S. is about on par with our European counterparts
okay.
in terms of both the current age expected life expectancy and the projected life expectancy. The real difference is both the fertility in immigration, and we have a much higher rate of immigration here in the U.S. than is the case in most European countries and in Japan. And
Bill Fry, thanks very much.
Sure, I enjoyed it.
Sorry to cut you off there, but we're out of time. Bill Fry, a demographer at the Brookings Institution, joined us by phone from his office in Washington, D.C. Tomorrow, it's Science Friday. Joe Palca will be the guest host with you tomorrow. We'll see you Monday. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.